Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. This time, we're going to be talking about Soteriology in Paul by Kent Hodge.
Oh, yeah. This is a really interesting one.
It is. It is. And actually, it really ties in well with something you mentioned last time. You were talking about how you've been thinking about social justice and how that connects to faith.
Yeah, yeah.
And Hodge's perspective on Paul is really going to blow your mind. I think it's going to give you some really cool stuff to think about.
Yeah, I think it will. What's really neat about this one is that Hodge isn't just like some theologian in an ivory tower.
Right.
He's actually super involved in hands-on community work in Nigeria with his wife, Ruth.
Oh, wow.
They lead this organization called Christian Faith Ministries. And get this, they support hundreds of mission stations across Africa.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. We're talking places like Cameroon, Chad, even Egypt.
Wow, so we're really getting like firsthand insights here, not just theories.
Absolutely.
This is like lived experience informing his theology.
Exactly.
So to kick things off, Hodge starts by challenging this idea of what he calls reductionist salvation.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
Basically, he's saying that if we're only focused on like individual salvation and getting to heaven, we might end up neglecting our responsibilities here on earth.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see how that could happen.
Like if we're always looking ahead to the afterlife, are we really going to be as motivated to, you know, care for the planet or fight for justice in the here and now?
That's a really good point.
Hodge even suggests that this worldview might be one reason why some evangelical groups aren't so big on things like environmentalism.
Interesting. Makes you think, huh?
It does. It does. And he ties this individualistic view back to how we interpret Genesis 1.26, where it says humanity is made in God's image.
Right.
Hodge thinks we often focus on the me part, the individual self. But he argues that the emphasis should be on the we, the collective human community.
Right. Like we're all in this together.
Exactly. And because of that, he says this individualistic lens can sometimes lead to apathy towards injustice.
Yeah, it's like we become so focused on our own little world that we forget about the suffering of others.
And that's a far cry from the early church. Mm-hmm. Hodge points out that they really emphasize caring for one another, even across borders.
It's like they saw themselves as one big family, united in their commitment to justice.
That's really powerful. Okay, now let's talk about Paul.
Let's do it.
One of Hodge's main arguments is that Paul never lost his Jewish identity. He didn't see Jesus as replacing Jewish hopes, but as fulfilling them.
Okay, so how does he back that up?
Well, to understand Hodge's point, you have to picture Paul's daily life. He probably prayed the Shema prayer from Deuteronomy 6 every day. You familiar with that one?
Yeah. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one.
That's the one. And that prayer talks about loving God and loving your neighbor as one concept. It's not like two separate things.
Right. They're intertwined.
Exactly. So Hodge suggests that Paul saw the gospel as fulfilling the Shema.
Okay, I'm starting to see where he's going with this.
Like, it's not just about following a bunch of rules, but about having the Torah written on our hearts, so to speak. It's about internal transformation that leads to action.
That makes a lot of sense. It's less about external behavior and more about a change of heart that naturally flows outward.
Exactly. And this transformation, Hodge says, isn't just about getting to heaven someday. It's about being part of the new creation that's happening now.
Oh, that's good. So he's saying that new creation isn't some far-off future event, but something that's already in progress.
Precisely.
I like that. It gives a sense of urgency and purpose to our lives in the present.
Right. And Hodge says this new creation is driven by people with changed hearts, working together to renew the world around them.
Okay, so it's a communal effort. We're all in on this together.
Absolutely. And that brings us to a really key point. Hodge believes that Paul's vision of salvation wasn't just about heaven, but about changing this world for the better.
So it's about bringing heaven to earth, in a sense.
You could say that. He uses Romans 8 as an example. He talks about the church's revelation to creation, and he says that's about spirit-filled lives leading to a renewed world.
It's like we're revealing God's goodness through our actions, showing the world what it looks like to live in right relationship with God and with each other.
That's a great way to put it. And Hodge even ties this back to the Adamic commission in Genesis, where humanity is called to steward and govern creation.
Right, that whole idea of being caretakers of the earth.
Exactly. And Hodge suggests that Paul saw this call as being restored through Christ. Like, we now have the power to participate in renewing creation.
It's a pretty big responsibility, but also an amazing opportunity, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Okay, now let's dive into a specific example from Philippians 3. This is a passage that's often used to argue for individual salvation.
Oh, you mean the one about dogs and circumcision?
That's the one.
Yeah.
You know, it's usually interpreted as Paul saying he's rejecting Jewish traditions and that personal faith in Christ is all that matters.
Yeah, I've heard it preached that way many times. But Hodge has a totally different take, right?
He does. He thinks Paul was actually challenging Jewish nationalism and exclusion. Like he was pushing for unity and fellowship across cultures.
That's interesting. So he's saying it's not about ditching your heritage, but about expanding your circle of love and acceptance to include everyone, Jew or Gentile.
Exactly. And Hodge even suggests that this is super relevant to us today with all the divisions we see between denominations.
Oh, wow. You're right. It's like we're falling into the same trap of exclusion that Paul was fighting against.
It's a really thought-provoking point, right?
It is. It makes you wonder if our modern-day us-versus-them mentality is really in line with the spirit of the gospel.
Definitely something to chew on. Speaking of pushing back, Hodge also challenges the traditional view of redemption.
Oh, how so?
Well, we often think of it as being saved from something, like hell or damnation.
Right.
But Hodge says it's also about being saved for something.
I like that. So it's not just about escaping a bad situation, but about embracing a new purpose.
Exactly. He looks at redemption through the lens of the Exodus story.
Okay, that makes sense.
It's not just about the Israelites being freed from slavery, but about them being set free to go and impact the world. It's about communal liberation with a purpose.
So it's about more than just getting a ticket to heaven. It's about joining God's mission here on earth.
You got it. And Hodge connects this to the idea of restoring God's shalom in creation. He also emphasizes the concept of wisdom in Colossians, linking it back to the Hebrew idea of wisdom as God's creative and renewing power.
I'm seeing a theme here. This idea that salvation is about so much more than just our individual destinies. It's about playing a part in God's grand plan to heal and restore the world.
Exactly. It's an incredible vision, isn't it?
It really is. But how does this all play out in a real-world setting? Like, how did the early church put these ideas into practice?
Well, Hodge uses the Corinthian church as an example.
Ah, the Corinthians. Always getting into trouble, weren't they?
You could say that. They were dealing with all sorts of issues. Hodge describes them as being controlled by their desires and passions, even though they call themselves Christians.
Okay, so what kind of problems were they having?
Well, there was immorality, lawsuits between believers, divisions over things like food and spiritual gifts. They were struggling on multiple fronts.
Sounds like they were having a tough time living out the unity and service that Hodge sees as so central to Paul's message.
Yeah, they definitely weren't a perfect example. But their struggles actually give us a lot to think about.
I bet they do.
We'll pick up there after a quick break. Stay tuned.
All right, so picking up where we left off, Hodge dives into this whole idea of the heavenlies, which is a term you see in Ephesians and Colossians.
Okay. Yeah, I'm always a little fuzzy on that concept. It sounds kind of mystical, you know?
Yeah, right. Most people, when they hear heavenlies, they think of it as like a place, like heaven itself. But Hodge kind of flips that on its head. He's saying it's more about power dynamics.
So not so much about where we go after we die, but about something more active.
Exactly. And he's really emphasizing that God's power isn't about like force or domination, but it's about influence rooted in love and service.
Okay, that makes sense, given everything we've been talking about with Hodge.
Yeah.
You know, this whole focus on social justice and community renewal. It's not about conquering other people, but uplifting them.
Right. He even uses Ephesians 1.3 as an example. Saying that believers are empowered by the heavenlies, not for like lording it over others, but for service. It's a very different way of thinking about power.
It is, especially in today's world where power is so often equated with like control and dominance.
You know, oh, yeah, for sure.
Hodge is offering a much more countercultural perspective.
Absolutely. And he even goes on to talk about these powers that are at work in the world as being both spiritual and human systems of control.
So not just like demons and angels, but also like societal structures.
Right.
And maybe even our own internal struggles.
Exactly. He seems to be saying that these powers operate on multiple levels, both around us and within us. So it's a reminder that the battle for renewal, it takes place in our hearts as well as out in the world.
Okay, now I'm starting to see how all these pieces fit together.
Yeah.
This idea of salvation as like a communal project, restoring shalom in creation and viewing power and wisdom through a different lens.
And it's all grounded in Paul's Jewish roots and his vision of Jesus as fulfilling God's promises to Israel.
You know, this is really challenging me to rethink some of my own assumptions about Christianity. This isn't your average Sunday school lesson.
Me neither. But it's a refreshing perspective, isn't it? And it aligns so well with Hodge's own work in Nigeria.
Right.
He's not just writing about these ideas, he's living them out.
Exactly.
So how does this all apply to the early church?
Hodge uses the Corinthians as an example, right?
Oh, yeah.
Weren't they struggling with all sorts of issues?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Hodge paints this picture of the Corinthians being swayed by those worldly powers we were just talking about. They were dealing with immorality, lawsuits within the church, divisions over things like food and spiritual gifts.
It's like they were having a really hard time living out that unity and service that Hodge sees as so central to Paul's message.
Exactly. And Hodge argues that their struggles stem from a misunderstanding of what it means to judge yourself, a concept that's often associated with the Lord's Supper.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. Usually judging yourself is interpreted as like introspection, right?
Like focusing on your own shortcomings.
But Hodge says, forget about navel-gazing. He says judging yourself is actually about looking outward, being attentive to the needs of others, especially those in need.
So instead of beating yourself up, you should be focusing on how you can help others.
Exactly. Hodge argues that the Corinthians were so focused on their own interests and privileges that they neglected this communal care. And that ultimately led to their weakness and division. It's like they were mirroring the very Roman systems they were supposed to be transforming.
Well, now that you mention the Roman Empire, it makes me think about the incredible work that Kent and Ruth are doing in Nigeria. Talk about facing external pressures and internal struggles.
It's true. Their work is incredibly challenging. They're literally building communities from the ground up. They're facing poverty, corruption, even religious persecution.
And they're doing it all while supporting hundreds of mission stations across Africa. That takes serious dedication.
It does. And it speaks volumes about their commitment to living out the gospel in a tangible way. They're not just preaching about love and justice, they're embodying it.
This is giving me a whole new appreciation for the challenges faced by the early church and by people of faith around the world today. It's not easy to be a light in the darkness.
It's not. But Hodge's interpretation of Paul gives us a roadmap, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it does.
For how to do it, how to integrate personal faith, communal responsibility, and that commitment to transforming the world. It's about being agents of change, not just spectators.
I love that. Okay, listeners, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with our final thoughts on soteriology and Paul. And we are back for the final part of our deep dive into soteriology and Paul. This study guide has really got me thinking differently about what it means to, you know, actually live out my faith.
Yeah, me too. It's been pretty eye-opening seeing how Hodge connects Paul's teachings to, like, real-world issues, you know, things like social justice and community building.
So as we wrap up here, what's like the one thing you're hoping listeners will take away from this deep dive?
For me, I think it's this idea that salvation isn't just about escaping this world, but about actually transforming it.
Right.
Hodge is reminding us that we're called to be agents of change, working towards justice and peace, not just in our own little bubbles, but, you know, in our communities and beyond.
It's not just about saving souls, but about, like, saving the world.
Right. Exactly. And it all starts with recognizing that, like, personal faith, social responsibility, global transformation, it's all interconnected. You can't really separate them.
It's like, you know, those ripples you see when you throw a stone in a pond? Our actions, even the small ones, they can have a ripple effect that goes way beyond ourselves.
Well, that's a great analogy. And Hodge's own life, his ministry, it's a testament to that. You know, he and Ruth are literally transforming lives in Nigeria. One community at a time.
Yeah. Their work is such a powerful example of what it looks like to, you know, actually put your faith into action. It's not just about words, but about deeds. And speaking of action, we want to leave you, our listener, with a question to ponder as we finish up here.
What would it look like to, you know, take this whole soteriology perspective and actually apply it to your own life and community?
Right. How can you move beyond just an individualistic view of faith and actually embrace this call to, you know, participate in God's work of renewal? Maybe it's volunteering at a local soup kitchen or advocating for policy changes or just, you know, being more intentional about showing love and kindness to your neighbors.
Remember, even small acts of service, they can make a big difference. And like Hodge has shown us, the power of transformed lives working together, well, that can truly change the world.
So well said. Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Soteriology and Paul by Kent Hodge. We hope this has inspired you to maybe see your faith in a new light and to step out in faith, making a difference in the world around you.
And if you're interested in learning more about the work Kent and Ruth Hodge are doing, building up those communities in Nigeria, you can find out more about Christian Faith Ministries online.
Definitely check them out. They are doing incredible work, and every little bit helps. Until next time, keep seeking, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.